Chapter 6, A Secret Word. Czerny yelled to the horses as he pulled back on the reins, attempting to slow the carriage. "Whoa, Dodger! Hold them! We're sliding! You've got to steady the bunch! Come on, boy! Whoa!" Something had made a loud bump. It wasn't the kind of bump you hear from regular travel. It was more like the kind of bump you hear when your wagon is having complications. And obviously Czerny knew this was the case, for he wrinkled his brow. Dodd watched in disbelief. Czerny commanded the animals with unusual eloquence. It was amazing. He had stuttered through a lengthy tell, but now that he bellowed at the horses, his speech flowed clearly. "Can I help?" shouted Dodd. He began to fear the worst and wanted to do something. However, as he spoke, the wagon veered toward the edge of the road and made such a loud moaning sound that Dodd's voice was lost beneath the noise. "What?" barked Czerny, turning to look at Dodd with a flash of confidence in his eyes. "I said," Dodd began. Yet he couldn't finish the sentence before fear took his tongue and tied it up. He noticed the front wheel of his side was beginning to slide off the road, and a steep slope waited to swallow the wagon. Dodd leaned away from the cliff, as if his shift in weight would make a difference. His eyes darted from Czerny to the 7-horse team, and then down to the riggings. That's where the problem was. They had completely broken on one side, damaging their ability to steer. It was dreadful. Dodd had seen the attack in his mind. The man with the scar on his hand had sabotaged their wagon. And just when Dodd thought it couldn't possibly get worse, Czerny gave him a smile as he jumped from the ride. Still clasping both reins, he landed squarely on one of the chargers. Before Dodd had time to question his motive, Czerny calmly unlatched a metal hitch which connected the remaining riggings and rode off with the team. He made a tight left into the gently upward sloping hillside, all the while appearing perfectly in control of the beasts. "How could he desert us to save the horses?" Dodd muttered loudly to himself. And then the answer came. His mind replayed the last 8 seconds nearly a dozen times in a tenth of one. Czerny had unlatched the hitch while wearing white gloves. His hands weren't visible. A horrible scar could easily be concealed by the gloves. And if he were the enemy, of course he would flee. It was only then that Dodd remembered Czerny had said Bombu trusted him enough to entitle him as head keeper of the lands. If Bombu were gone, what role would he play? What agreements had they made? Questions flooded Dodd's mind, but were quickly cut short when the wagon took a plunge for the worse. 2 wheels now rolled precariously off the road at the edge of an abrupt decline, and because it was the steepest part of the journey, there was little likelihood that the wagon would naturally slow down. Something had to be done in a hurry, or they all faced certain destruction. "What in the blazing gooseberries are the two of you doing up there?" hollered Boot, who still lounged across 4 seats, yet couldn't nap any longer. Bombu continued to sleep. He stirred and then went back to snoring quietly. His body would have jolted more if it weren't for a pile of old blankets that steadied him. He had brought a gift of new blankets to the hospital, and in return the nursing staff had insisted he take the old rags home to aid in washing horses. "There aren't two of us," Dodd anxiously yelled back to Boot. "Czerny just rode off with the horses. We're doomed." Boot rolled his eyes. From his vantage point, Dodd blocked the only window to the front, so it seemed likely that Dodd was only pulling his leg. "No, I'm serious," Dodd insisted, his white knuckles clinging to a handrail. "We're heading off a cliff." The ride continued to get rougher as the carriage picked up speed, particularly on the side where both wheels had now long since left the road for rockier fringes. "Sure," said Boot playfully, "and I'm the chief noble treader of Green." "Just look out your window," Dodd begged. "What, and have you get the better of me? I love adventure as much as the next guy. If you can handle the ride, trust me, Dodd, I'm just fine with it. Besides, if you race much more, you may fall off the front and crack your skull. My worst in here would be a mouthful of pillow stuffing. These seats really do make a great place to nap. You should have stuck around." "You think I'm kidding?" shouted Dodd desperately. He was completely exasperated. It seemed impossible to get Boot's serious attention. Fortunately, he didn't have to. "What's going on?" mumbled Bombu. One of Boot's large bounces had dislodged Bombu's pile of ragged blankets, affecting his stability. Boot was having such fun shaking around that he actually punctuated each jolt with his own special hop. "Oh, it's nothing," said Boot calmly. "Dodd and Czerny are just having a little fun with us." "Fun!" exclaimed Dodd. His eyes were as big as dinner plates with fear. "Look out your window!" Bombu steadied himself on his right arm and rose up high enough to peek out the side porthole. "Watch out for the cliff," ordered Bamboo, instantly recognizing how dire their circumstance was. "I know," yelled Dodd, beyond frazzled. "That's what I've been telling Boot. What should we do now? Zerny's run off with the horses and this carriage is hopelessly out of control. The road only gets steeper from here." Dodd slid over, providing Boot and Bamboo with a better view out the front. A teamless void where the steeds had been validated his claims. "We need a jump," urged Bamboo, crawling his way to the back of the carriage. "There's no time to waste." Suddenly, Boot didn't look so manly and confident. As a matter of fact, for a split second, Dodd was amused and refreshed to see Boot's girlish look of distress. It wasn't that Dodd didn't like Boot. He thought Boot was a fine friend, and he admired him and enjoyed his company. But somehow, watching Boot cringe under the heat of worry made Dodd feel unusually satisfied, like he was vindicated for all of the times he had been passed up to play ball by boot-looking pals, or for all of the times a girl had swooned over Boot's type while staying casual friends with Cole. "Okay, then," agreed Dodd, taking a deep breath for courage. He glanced at the rocky terrain and hoped for a miraculous landing. "What?" winced Boot, his face curled up in fear. The wagon was going fast enough that they would all be seriously injured from jumping. It was ironic that their journey from the hospital looked like it would soon become a one-way ticket back, or even worse. "Let's see you jump first," Boot suggested to Bamboo. He grabbed at the carriage door handle and gave it a firm twist. "It's locked! The door's locked! We're stuck in here!" Boot's eyes filled with terror. The 12-seater had been refurbished from an old jail carriage, used to transport criminals. It was as safe as they come, unless you wanted to break out. The windows were purposefully small. There was no way Bamboo would fit out of them, even if the thick panes could be shattered, let alone Boot's massive body. And though the front window had no pane, it was even smaller, less than half the size of the others. Boot gave the door a few firm kicks and found that it was solid. Tricking their way out didn't seem likely, considering the door was made with a metal casing, a thick oak center, and a cast-iron loop lock on the outside. Without a key, it wouldn't budge. Bamboo attempted the door for a moment, then came to the same conclusion. "You're right, it's hopeless." Bump! A large rock shook the wagon hard enough to lift both rear wheels off the ground. It was obvious the ride would soon come to an end. Only a short distance separated them from a sheer cliff. It was a 200-foot drop lined with jagged rocks at the base, and worse still, just up the road was a sharp turn to the left. There was no way to steer the wagon from launching off the edge once it reached the bend. "Save yourself," called Bamboo to Dodd in an unusually stern sort of voice. "You can't do anything to help us now. Jump! Live to tell what happened. Stop whoever did this. Ask Dilly and Higa for the map. Tell them Hopas. Promise me you'll search it out, Dodd. Promise me." Bamboo's words caught Dodd off guard. He was asking for a final favor in anticipation of his passing. Dodd didn't know how to respond and wasn't ready to give up on the possibility that the two captives could be delivered. "We'll figure something out, Bamboo. Don't worry," said Dodd, racking his mind. But nothing came. "Promise me, Dodd! Hopas!" insisted Bamboo urgently. He spoke with such conviction that the only course of action was to agree. "I promise," stammered Dodd uncomfortably. "I'll do it." Boot stared in horror. The situation was past what he could believe. His face revealed fear, and hidden somewhere in the fear was a lot of regret. Bamboo, on the other hand, beamed with peace and satisfaction, knowing his life had been spent doing good. Immediately, memories burst into Dodd's mind, pointing toward hope. It was like a 2-hour movie had been condensed into 2 seconds, and the conclusion of the film was just the inspiration he needed. In his mind, he recalled an exodus of sorts. Numbers of loaded wagons took their place in line. One family joined the throng with a carriage full of gear. 5 of their 6 kids walked to the side, while one lay painfully stuffed in the far rear with a broken leg. Eventually, a giant hill sprawled downward. All of the wagons followed like train cars, systematically increasing their speed to fit perfectly in line on the road. Walkers were left far behind, as the procession sped up, heeding gravity which hastened their descent. Suddenly, one cart jammed, causing the following travelers to collide. From the middle to the end, horses were injured as they trotted into other carts, and 2 wagons had the misfortune of rolling. It was a mess, and 1 12-year-old boy was to blame. "That's it," declared Dodd with confidence. "Quick, hand me the old rags." Boots stared from the back corner of the wagon and yelled, "Have you lost your freshy mind?" His hands once again began yanking fruitlessly on the locked door. Bamboo, on the other hand, didn't waste any precious time. He complied with the strange request by moving all of the old blankets with remarkable speed. Dodd took two long rags and fed them simultaneously into the spokes on the front wheels. The wagon jolted wildly, knocking Dodd forward. His feet left the buckboard and he took flight until a quick hand grabbed him by the pants and pulled him back. "I've got you, son," said Bamboo. "Whatever you're doing is working. Do it again." Friction from the blankets rubbing against the axle and the sides of the wagon formed a weak braking mechanism. Frantically, Dodd lowered all of the rags into the spokes. The cart slowed down with every rotation of the wheels. But sadly, it wasn't enough. The weight of the wagon would keep it running, albeit sluggishly, right off the cliff at the bend. Dodd stomped his foot in frustration. He had come too close to just let his friends die. The bottom of the buckboard jiggled. One of the thick oak slats was completely free, having been dislodged by the bumpy ride. With not a moment to spare, Dodd took his board and jumped ship. He knew the consequences of jamming something in the spokes of a moving wheel, thanks to Greg Sy, who in third grade had knocked out three of Cole's teeth by ambushing his bike with a broomstick. "Brace yourself!" yelled Dodd. He plunged the board into the left front wheel. It wasn't as easy as he had thought. The blankets were entirely shrouding the spokes, making it less like accosting a bicycle with a broomstick, and more like stabbing an elephant with a blunt spear. He tried again and again as he jogged to the side of the wagon. It wasn't working. It seemed impossible. But finally, one jab went all the way through. With a loud groaning noise, the wagon's back wheels took to flight, and the cart made a half flip, landing on its roof. It continued to skid until it came to a complete stop with the rear 5 feet of the 12-seater hanging off the cliff's edge. "That was a close one," gasped Dodd breathlessly. He hurried to the front window slit and peered in. Bamboo and Boot were heaped against the back wall of the cart. "Oh," moaned Boot loudly. "Am I dead?" "I don't think so," winced Bamboo. "Or you would be lighter, wouldn't you?" Boot had come to rest on top of Bamboo when the wagon stopped moving. Both were bruised and sore, yet thankfully neither had broken any bones. "How did you think of that?" asked Boot as soon as he revived. Dodd smiled triumphantly and began to explain. He told about the wagon train and the young boy and finally concluded by saying, "If a bored 12-year-old can accidentally stop a caravan by dipping the end of a rope into spokes, I figured the blankets could stop this cart." For a few moments, the tables had turned and Boot was listening to Dodd's adventurous tale. And it wasn't long before Boot wasn't the only one listening. Within a matter of minutes, a dozen strong boys gathered around the wagon. They had seen Bamboo's outfit coming home and had watched the whole ordeal from fields below and from the road as they raced to his aid. Dodd felt comfort knowing that despite having an enemy with a scarred hand who wished them dead, many people did in fact like them. It was also nice to have other people show up quickly, a group that didn't include Czerny. "Can you help us out?" asked Boot of his friends. "Well, sure," responded one treader, who stepped from the crowd and bent down to peek into the front window. He appeared to be the same age as Boot, or maybe slightly younger. The resemblance between the two showed they were likely brothers. "I'd love to help you. Just give me the keys and I'll have you out in a flippy." "Buck!" Boot exclaimed. "If I had the key, wouldn't I be out right now? Dodd managed to stop this carriage at full press with no horses. Don't you think he could have negotiated a simple lock?" Buck laughed and laughed. "It's good to see you haven't cracked your head wide open, brother. Mom would have blamed me for your death, and worse still, she'd have pulled me straight out of the Coosings." Dodd heard the word Coosings, and this time he remembered. They were a group of the most elite, young, talented potentials, mostly treaders, who were practicing at Twist Yard, much like a training camp. A group of the best youth from Green, Rawl, and Souche all stayed with Bamboo, first as pots, and then if they were good enough, they were given a chance to represent their realms as Greenlings, Rawlings, or Souchelings. The top 15 individuals from each realm were then selected to join the Coosings. The goal of everyone training at Twist Yard was to support the peace and uphold the democracy Bamboo's parents had started, focusing on diplomacy and defense. The name Coosing had been given by Bamboo when he established Twist Yard, shortly after the defeat of Doss. He had named them Coosings because of the root word Coos, which literally meant true friend. And the Coosings were just that, A group of true friends. Sort of. Buck surveyed the mess and asked who had the key. When Dodd wasn't sure, Buck paced back and forth to the side of the cart. "Whose crazy idea was it anyway?" he said, peering at Boot through a side window. "Locking this thing up is a death trap." His voice clearly indicated he was done being funny and wanted to know who had almost caused the death of his brother. Bamboo gently shifted the conversation and said that Zerny must have gotten injured while trying to redirect the horses. Dodd wasn't the only one who had noticed Zerny's convenient absence. He hadn't come down the road to see the treacherous outcome. Yet Bamboo's conclusion about Zerny was different than Dodd's. A handful of boys quickly agreed to ride up in search of Zerny and the key. Dodd thought about Bamboo's concern for Zerny. It irritated him to think that Bamboo didn't see the signs. It made things awkward. Dodd wanted to speak openly with Bamboo about his suspicions, but circumstances were too tricky to start accusing a longtime friend of being a traitor. At that moment, Dodd resolved to keep a close eye on Zerny while holding back his thoughts, at least until he had real proof. In the end, it took nearly an hour to obtain the key from Zerny, and even then, Zerny didn't bring it himself. He was busy taking the long way home to try to calm the horses down. Time waiting was spent telling and retelling the event that had just occurred. All of them seemed to have different angles of the tell, though they only shared their accounts after forcing Dodd to retell his a dozen times. He, however, preferred Boot's version over any of the others. Boot openly divulged his own doubts and weaknesses while recounting a wonderful rendition of the truth about Dodd's accomplishments. It was ennobling of Boot. Dodd saw that there was more to him than the guy that had bragged the afternoon away in the cart. He wasn't unbearably cocky after all. Or even if he was, it was nice to see that he was capable of celebrating other people's achievements as well. Once the lock was opened, it was a matter of only a few short minutes by horseback to the house. Bamboo took off first, riding double with Dilly, who had come inquiring after his whereabouts. She arrived at the click of the key and was gone in a flash, spouting something about a party. Bamboo's absence from the group changed the conversation quickly. The boys had spoken carefully in his presence to show respect, yet in a moment they turned to teasing and jabbing as they worked together to tip the wagon over and hitch it to a new team. There was, evidently, some division in the group of true friends, and they were mostly Kusings. When their task was completed, Dodd gratefully accepted to ride double with a younger treader named Jim. Everyone ribbed Jim about a myriad of things. He had blonde hair that looked almost white, while most male treaders younger than 200 had dark brown or black hair. And he was short, only 5'6". Nevertheless, that was likely due to his young age of 28, though he looked like a 12-year-old human. And he was an overall nice guy, perfect to pick on. But above all else, they especially teased him about his name. One treader, Sob, wouldn't stop torturing him. He stood out in the group as a real tormentor, towering above the other boys at 6'4". He looked 18. His slick black hair was well-groomed, and his clothes indicated that he had money. Dodd knew well Sob's type from his own experiences at school. Every group has at least one or two of them, the kind of people that can't seem to say anything nice about others. And surprisingly, they often have a following. "Jim," Sob called out, "how can a dog like you ride with Dodd? Go fetch it, Jimmy dog. Run and play. Go on, boy. Be a nice doggy. Run along. Before I beat you with a stick, I'll be the one to give Dodd a ride home." Many of the guys laughed while Jim hung his head down in embarrassment. Dodd didn't think it was funny, even if the name Jim had been regularly used in their society to mean a bad pet. "I'm just fine riding with Jim," snapped Dodd confidently. He held back his anger, as usual. For a split second, he thought of his brother Josh. Dodd knew Josh would deck Sob hard if he were present. "Jim, Jim, Jim, Jim," Sob said, shaking his head back and forth. "Don't make Dodd choose between me and you. He doesn't know your history, that you're from Soosh, some tribal lot. It's no wonder you lost so many Sooshlings to stupidity. Bad leadership. Now run along, dog. Even your mother called you a dog with your name, Jim." "My mom thought it was a perfectly fine name," Jim started to explain. However, before he could finish, he was rudely interrupted by more taunting from Sob. "My mommy calls me Jimmy. I'm her..." "Knock it off," barked Dodd, unusually defiant. "I knew a Jim once, and he was perfectly decent. Besides, in one language I speak, sob is what little babies do when they cry. Is that what you do? Cry like a baby?" Dodd knew they were fighting words, but who was going to pick a fight with him after he had just saved the wagon moments before? He felt like a hero, if only for a day, and considered it his duty to stick up for the downtrodden while on top. "You may think you're funny," snarled Sob, "but I don't think." "That's your problem," blurted Dodd, snipping in. "You can't think. It takes a brain to think." It wasn't in Dodd's nature to be rude, yet this was a refreshing chance to say a few things he had held back for years, and he wanted to help Jim. Sob gave him a crusty look and rode off on his horse, followed by seven other formidable-looking treaders. "I imagine you've made a friend," said Buck, smiling gloatingly. "Sob's a drip of sweat," reassured Boot warmly. "Don't worry about him. He's way too bushy for his own good. He thinks he's king here in Green, and it won't be long before we'll ship him and his kind back to Rawl where they came from. Evidently, all the training in the world can't encourage courtesy among the likes of them." No offense to Bomboo and his hopes for the spread of Treader ideals. They're noble, but impossible. Dodd felt bad about offending someone. However, it did make him Jim's instant lifelong pal. "Race you back," yelled Buck to Dodd and Jim. He had just helped his brother up, making it a fair two-per-horse challenge. Jim and Dodd rode at a gallop. They didn't stand a chance of beating Buck and Boot, who seemed to practically fly. Yet it mattered little. At least it wasn't another carriage ride. Dodd had already set his mind to walk the distance if he had to, rather than put himself into another possible death trap, at least for the day. "So, what inspired your mother to name you Jim?" asked Dodd, tasting dust in his mouth. "It's actually a popular name in my hometown." Jim gave Dodd a very surprised look. Nobody came from a place where Jim was a common name for people. "My mom named me after a great man that lived among the Maj. I've heard legends about him, how he was good and smart, the real hero type." Dodd continued to listen, half-interested, as they rode to Twistyard. It was hard for him to think of anything but the near-fatal event that had just transpired. At the house, there was plenty of distractions. Over 1,000 treaders were gathering to feast in a large banquet hall, celebrating Bomboo's safe return. Most of them appeared to be teenagers, 12 to 18, or so they looked, and a few were adults. Dodd hadn't realized that Bomboo had been gone for months doing important business, and that his arrival was expected. Boot approached Dodd with a smirk on his face and asked, "Do you have a minute?" The crowd was loud enough that he had to yell in order to communicate across a short distance of 10 feet. "Sure," responded Dodd with a nod. The two hurried out of the great hall, leaving Jim and the others with the crowd. Boot led Dodd to a side room where they could talk. "I just wanted to say thank you again for saving my life," said Boot, tipping his head to one side and looking down at the floor. He continued haltingly, "I mean, if I would have been in your shoes, with Bomboo telling me to jump and save myself, I probably would have jumped." Boot looked squarely at Dodd and added quickly, "That's not to say I'm a whippling or anything. It's just what anyone would have done. Anyone but you. You're a real friend." Dodd was speechless. The look in Boot's eyes made everything he said twice as nice. It was the kind of look Josh or Alex might have given him when saying thank you, not the kind a cool guy at school would ever give. Before going back to rejoin the party, Boot patted Dodd on the shoulder and said, "Welcome to the Kusings. I've searched for about 3 years now, since I was commissioned by Bomboo to choose another member, and I choose you." Boot reached in the side pocket of his pants and pulled out a ring. It matched the one he wore on his own hand. "Be it known to all by this ring that you are officially a member of the Kusings, and I am your friend, your true friend." Just hearing the words caused goosebumps all over Dodd's arms. He couldn't think of what to say that would adequately express his gratitude, so instead he choked out, "Thank you." It was overwhelming. As Dodd slipped the ring onto his finger, he could tell from that moment it was the beginning of his first experience with something he had never had before, a best friend.